I've entitled my talk this morning, God is Working, Are We Cooperating? Do you remember a bumper sticker, something like this? Sometimes I get the impression that many people in Australia hate work. Perhaps it can be related to our convict past, with many people forced to work. But what about the many emancipists who went on to successfully work in their adopted country? The many free immigrants who worked hard to settle this land? And what about Australia's original inhabitants who worked the land for many, many years before the arrival of the Europeans? Do you realise that God loves to work? Right at the beginning of the Bible, we have the story of creation, a story of God at work. And right there in that creation story, God invites men and women to join him in his work, naming the animals, tending the garden. Later, God worked with Abraham, Isaac and Jacob to create a nation out of their 70 descendants who moved to Egypt during the 7-year famine. Jump forward to today. Is God still working? If so, when and where does he work? Only on Sundays? Only in church? Does he only work by himself? Or does he also work in conjunction with his followers? Even though you and I might not realise it, God is constantly at work accomplishing his purposes. He is at work in the whole world. He is at work in Australia. He is at work in Sydney. He is at work in our local community, he is at work in our families, and he is at work in our own personal lives. The big questions are, do you and I recognise when and where God is at work? And then, do we cooperate with God in his work? I'm not talking about doing work for God. I'm talking about identifying when and where God is working and then cooperating with him. There's a world of difference. Human efforts may at best have varying degrees of success and at worst fail entirely. God's activities may encounter opposition from the enemy, but they never ever fail to accomplish his purposes. Remember the words found in the book of Zechariah? Not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord. The purpose of my talk today is to encourage each one of us to recognise when and where God is at work and to cooperate with him. A story is told of a man who is lost in a forest. Later in describing his experience, he told how frightened he was and how he had finally even prayed. Someone asked him, "Did God answer your prayer?" "Oh no," the man replied. "Before God had a chance, a guide came along and showed me the way out." Like that man, we may sometimes not recognise God at work in our lives or in the life of the world around us. Whether we are a believer in Jesus Christ or a person who does not even believe in a supreme being, the fact is that God has been working in our lives. And the lives of all those around us. More than we realise. Today's Bible reading in Luke 17 records the account of 10 lepers, 10 men, who had infectious skin disease, commonly translated as leprosy. In the Israelite community, when a person discovered a rash or a skin disorder, he or she had to go to the priest for examination. The priest then determined whether it was contagious or not, and whether the person was to be declared ceremonially unclean. Jewish law prohibited anyone with such a disease from associating with the general community. They had to be isolated and many times lived as outcasts until they died. This was necessary in order to keep infectious diseases from becoming an epidemic. But for those afflicted, it could be a life sentence. On other occasions, Jesus healed individuals who had leprosy or some type of infectious skin disease. We see in both Luke and Mark and Matthew, they all record incidences where Jesus simply stretched out his hand, touched the leper, and immediately the leprosy left the person. And indeed, in Matthew chapter 11, verse 5, it actually records that healing people with leprosy was actually a feature of Jesus' work. In Luke chapter 17, 10 men who were part of a leper colony approached Jesus together, but they remained at a distance, as per the law. They called out to him, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." Without seeming to do anything to heal them, Jesus merely gave the instruction to go show themselves to the priest. At the moment of Jesus' instruction, the men were still lepers. No physical change had yet taken place. But in faith, the men obeyed. As they began to walk towards the priest, they were healed. Jesus always requires faith on the part of the person or persons who are seeking healing. Many times he asked those who wanted to be healed, "Do you believe that I can do this?" In this instance, Jesus required a demonstration of faith on the part of the lepers in asking them to walk away even before there was any evidence that they were healed. The Bible does not record how far the men had walked before being healed. But presumably it was a sufficient distance away that the other nine could not be bothered to return to Jesus. Whilst the major theme in this Bible story is to encourage us to show gratitude, today I want to focus on the fact that each of the lepers had to put their faith into action before they experienced God at work. Earlier this year, when I last gave a talk, I spoke about Tabitha. Her story is recorded in Acts 9. Tabitha was always doing good and helping the poor. However, she had been sick and had subsequently died. I suggested that there were four distinct characters or groups of characters in this account. There is Tabitha herself, there were the widows who were mourning the death of Tabitha, there were the two believers who went to go and get Peter, and then there was the Apostle Peter himself. Each of these people were actively engaging with God and joining with him in different ways. Tabitha was hard-working, kind and generous. She was always doing good and helping the poor. The widows were mourning Tabitha's death. They had received gifts from Tabitha, and perhaps they had been encouraged to do similar work themselves. Then there were the two believers who walked from Joppa to Lydda and then back again, a total of some 38 kilometres. They really went out of their way in an expression of love for Tabitha and for God. Finally, there was the Apostle Peter, who responded with the resources that he had, a knowledge of God's loving concern for all people, and a belief built up by personal experience that God answers our prayers, sometimes even in miraculous ways. God was at work in different ways in each of these people's lives. They had recognised God at work and were actively cooperating with him. What then of you and me? Do we recognise when and where God is working in our lives and in the lives of those around us? What are the instances when God is saying to you and to me, please come and join me as I accomplish my purposes? In Matthew 18, Jesus said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. What does it mean to be childlike in our faith? Childlike, not childish. Here are some possible qualities. Trusting. Transparent. There's an old computer term, WYSIWYG. What does that mean? What you see is what you get. When Jesus saw Nathanael coming towards him, he said, behold an Israelite. Indeed, in whom is no guile. Carefree. Children usually focus and revel in the moment because they are not entangled by the complications and distractions of this life. In the parable of the seeds, Jesus said that the seed falling among the thorns is like someone who hears the word, but the worries and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. Insistent. As everyone knows, children can be persistent. They never tire of asking questions and making requests. Spontaneous. Children are usually ready for a new adventure. They have few, if any, past experiences to convince them to hold back for fear of failure or discomfort. Imaginative. Children see possibilities where many may see problems. George Bernard Shaw said, you see things and say why. But I dream things that never were, and I say, why not? If these words seem familiar to you, they were quoted by President John F. Kennedy, and later similar words by his brother, Senator Robert Kennedy. Joyful. A child's joy is not so much based on the circumstances about them as it is in the people they love being with and who love them. What if you and I started to develop or further develop these characteristics in our walk of faith with God? What if we specifically ask God to help us to be more trusting, to be more transparent, to be more carefree, to be more insistent, to be more spontaneous, to be more imaginative, and to be more joyful. There's a story in the Old Testament where Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, was at war with the Israelites. Time and again, the prophet Elisha, warned the king of Israel so that the Israelites evaded defeat. Ben-Hadad, that thought that there must have been a spy in his army passing on information to the Israelites. "None of us, my lord the king," said one of his officers. But Elisha the prophet, who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom. The king found out that Elisha was in the city of Dothan. Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and surrounded the city. When Elisha's servant got up and went out early in the morning, an army with horses and chariots surrounded the city. "Oh no, my lord, what shall we do?" the servant asked. "Don't be afraid," the prophet answered. "Those who are with us are more than those who are against us." And Elisha prayed, "Open his eyes, Lord, so that he might see." And then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills, full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. As the enemy came towards them, Elisha asked God to make them blind. Elisha then led the blind enemy army into the arms of the Israelites. At Elisha's request, God reopened the eyes of the enemy army. The Israelite king immediately wanted to slaughter the enemy army. But Elisha said, "No, give them food and water and send them on their way." So the bands from Aram stopped raiding the Israelite territory. Some of you may know that our extended family is walking through a medical crisis at the moment. A couple of months ago, our son-in-law Owen, a primary school principal who has just turned 50, was diagnosed with a degenerative brain disease for which there is no cure. The disease apparently affects the part of the brain that tells the muscles what to do. He's receiving palliative care at home, and humanly speaking, is expected to die within weeks or days. I'm telling you this, it's not my intention to distress you, but simply to set the scene for our current family situation. However, since hearing the news, I have not had a sense of despair. I personally have not asked the obvious question, why? In the days since hearing the diagnosis, a significant number of encouraging Bible verses have come to mind. These verses, together with the comments from two other members of our extended family, who have been praying for Owen, have encouraged me to pray positively for Owen. As far as I know, Owen is not a follower of Jesus. So my main prayer is that in some way God will reveal himself to Owen, either in a vision or a dream, or by enabling Owen to have a conversation with another person so that he will respond positively to God's love. That's the main miracle I'm praying for. The second miracle I'm praying for is that God would heal Owen in order that he might be the godly man, the godly husband, the godly father, and the godly community leader that God has called him to be. I'm also praying for Owen's wife and our daughter, Kirsty, who has had God's life implanted in her at an early age, but seems to have drifted away from him. I'm praying for their three young daughters and Owen's family as well. How will God act? I don't know. I've not heard an audible voice or seen a hand writing on the wall. He may answer exactly as I have prayed, or he may answer in a different way. I'm aware of the words in Isaiah 55 where God says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, and my ways are not your ways." However, I do have a strong sense that God is at work, and I look forward in anticipation to see God accomplishing his purposes. Last week, Ilung quoted Tom Wright, who said, "This is not so much about having a big enough faith in God, but having faith in a big God." God has been challenging me personally to have faith in a big God. And he has done it in at least one practical way. At home, we keep both our cars in a carport at the back of our house. The carport is enclosed on three sides, with the fourth side opening onto our backyard. Early this year, a number of Indian minor birds began daily sitting on the car roof racks and then doing their poop. This got worse and worse. I bought some bird netting and hung it down the fourth side of the carport so the Indian miners could not fly in. That only stopped them for a little while. They simply walked under the netting and then flew up and sat on the roof racks and did their poop. Then I attached to the bottom of the netting reflective streamers that are supposed to frighten birds away. The Indian miners walked between the streamers and flew up and sat on the roof racks and did their poop. One day I seen 12 separate Indian miner poops off the car. I got so fed up with this that I finally turned to God and said to him, "Look, the Indian miners are your creatures. Can you please keep them from pooping on the cars?" That was 3 months ago. To my knowledge, we have not had an Indian miner poop on either car since. The one or two bird poops that we have had, I think, have come from doves. I hope they're not in cahoots. I think that the whole episode of bird pooping has been God helping me a bit more to realise that He, God, is in charge of the world. This has not been a focus on my faith, but a focus on God, the creator of this world. Here's another bird story to encourage you, your faith. You've probably heard the term bird brain. It's usually intended to describe a silly or stupid person, presumably because some birds do silly things. Well, again in the Old Testament we read that Ahab became king of Israel. Ahab was a bad king. He did more evil in the eyes of the Lord than any of those before him. Prompted by God, the prophet Elijah told Ahab, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word. This obviously angered the king greatly, and God instructed Elijah to flee for his life to the Kirith ravine east of the Jordan. God told Elijah exactly where to hide. Not only that, God made arrangements to ensure that Elijah did not perish. God said to Elijah, you will drink from the brook, and I have directed the ravens to supply you with food there. Just imagine for a moment that you're one of those ravens. You've been flying around all morning looking for something to eat. The relentless sun is beating down on your back. Perhaps you haven't eaten for a few days and your stomach is beginning to growl. Finally, you see a slight movement down below. You zoom in for a closer look. You can't see anything. Then, just as you're about to fly away, believing that your eyes must have been playing tricks with you, there's a mad scramble as a rabbit breaks cover. The chase is on. The rabbit is running this way and that. Just as you're about to grab the rabbit, it darts in another direction. The rabbit knows that it's running for its life. Eventually, your years of experience enable you to catch the rabbit. Somewhat exhausted from the chase, you carry your meal, fresh meal, back to the place where you eat. Suddenly you get this strange impulse to fly in a direction nowhere near where you intended to fly. Then, far below, you see a man come out of a cave. He's looking up in the sky. He's looking straight at you. When you have almost reached a position directly above the man, you get another impulse. This time the impulse is to release the rabbit from your claws. No, 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 you think. I haven't eaten in days. That's my only food. But the impulse is too strong, and you release the rabbit. The man on the ground quickly picks up the rabbit and starts to make a fire. You circle around for a while, but soon it becomes obvious there will be no food left over for you. Besides, you like your meat raw. With a sigh, you fly away, back to where you first found the rabbit. Perhaps there might be a second one there. This is the God we serve. A God who spoke the worlds into existence. A God who commands the stars to hang in their allotted place. A God who knows the very number of hairs on each of our heads. A God who loves us each individually so much that if we were the only person living on planet Earth, he would have still sent his Son, Jesus Christ, to Earth. A God who, even though he won the victory over death on the cross, is still actively at work in the world today. He is still actively at work in your world, and he is still actively at work in my world. Each day, God says to you and to me, I am working in your world. Please recognize where and when I am working and join with me in fulfilling my purposes. Amen.